Thanks. So I'm going to be presenting first about Housing First with Intensive Case Management, which is the 12-month outcomes of the at-home Chaiswa randomized trial. So I can't help but comment. So as an American who's lived in Canada now for many years, I've noticed, I think that it's important to realize Canada is officially bilingual, so anything done by the federal government has to have both an English and a French version. So Chaiswa simply means at home in French. What I've noticed is that when Americans talk about it, they inevitably refer to it as the Chaiswa study. I think it's just so appealing because it has that kind of high class French kind of connotation to it. So it's the at home Chaiswa study. I just want to point out it's. But I understand the appeal of the French. So. I've been told to disclose the following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. I have no relationships to disclose. So as Eric has explained, the study was a trial of the Housing First model, and I'm going to, as you all know, the Housing First model consists first of the housing, which is scattered site apartments with rent supplements, and second with the supports. The supports are of two different types in this study and depending on the need level of the person. So just to, again, just reemphasize that the previous randomized controlled trial of Housing First that Sam Simbaris did in New York City used assertive community treatment. And what I'm going to present to you here is the version that we tested, which is support involving intensive case management. And it's important to realize that assertive community treatment, or ACT, involves a multidisciplinary team with wraparound service where most of the service is provided by the team itself. The team is available 24/7, and the staff-to-client ratio is 1 to 10. Now, as I think most of you realize, this is an extremely resource-intensive model of care support delivery. And intensive case management provides a somewhat less intensive support service with case managers, each of whom have individual caseloads. The case managers coordinate or broker care to existing services. They're available about 12 hours a day in our model that we tested, and the staff-to-client ratio is in the range of 1 to 15, no higher than 1 to 15, and as low as 1 to 13. So the objectives of this component of the study was to determine the effects of a Housing First intervention with intensive case management compared to usual care for mentally ill homeless adults who had moderate needs for mental health supports. So Eric's already described the eligibility criteria. Just briefly to note that to be in the study, you had to be absolutely homeless or precariously housed. The reason for that is that in some cities, such as Moncton, the smaller city, there were relatively few absolutely homeless people, so it was felt that in order to meet recruitment targets, the eligibility criteria had to be broadened. In most of the larger centers, more than 95% of the participants were absolutely homeless. You had to have a diagnosable mental disorder. You didn't have to be diagnosed at the time of enrollment. And concurrent substance use disorders were neither required nor qualifying. So a substance use disorder alone would not qualify the person for the study. But if they had a mental disorder in addition to a substance use disorder, that was fine, based on the structured interview, the mini. And lastly, they had to be able to give informed consent. They had to be legally resident in Canada, and they could not be current clients of an ACT or ICM team because that was part of the intervention that was being delivered. So I'm just going to spend a little bit of time talking about the stratification by need level because this is really important to understand what this study showed and what the subsequent presentation also shows. So the way to think about this is that what we did was we defined what a high needs person was, and everyone who wasn't high needs who met eligibility criteria was a moderate needs individual. So to be high needs, you had to have all three of these qualifying characteristics. You had to have a current psychotic or bipolar disorder, and you had to have a low level of community functioning defined as the MCAS or Multnomah Community Assessment Scale score of less than or equal to 62. and you had to have an indicator of high service need, which was defined as two or more hospitalizations for mental illness in one of the last 5 years, or recent arrest or incarceration, or comorbid substance use. If you did not meet all three of those criteria, then you were defined as moderate needs. So it's very important. The results I'm going to present now are for these moderate needs individuals who did not meet these three criteria at the time of enrollment. So this is the consort diagram that shows the enrollment, and Eric has already explained to you the overall enrollment. So now for the moderate, as he pointed out, there was a stratification by need level. 1,198 individuals were stratified to the moderate need category, and they were located in the cities of Vancouver, Winnipeg, Toronto, and Montreal. You might ask, well, what happened to the people in Moncton? Because Moncton is a smaller center, they felt that they were only able to field a single intervention team, and that intervention team was an ACT team. So because that is a higher level of support, they're not included in this analysis of intensive case management. So we randomized 689 individuals in these four cities to the intervention arm, and we randomized 509 individuals to the usual care arm. And we have complete follow-up data. Well, all of these individuals were analyzed. Most people had some follow-up data, but it's an intention to treat analysis, so all these individuals were included in the final analysis. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the outcomes that we analyzed in our study. So the primary outcome was percent of days stably housed over 12 months. And I should point out that what I'm presenting here is the midpoint or interim analysis of outcomes at 12 months following randomization. The secondary outcomes I'm going to go into just in a little bit of detail. Obviously, our hypothesis was that these secondary outcomes would also demonstrate improvements with the Housing First intervention. So first, we examined health status. And actually, I'm just going to again point out that these are the outcomes that were analyzed in the 12-month analysis. There were obviously other measures that were collected as part of the study, but we determined a priori that these were the secondary outcomes that we would analyze for the 12-month analysis. So health status was measured using an instrument called the EQ5D. Substance use problems were assessed using the GAIN instrument. Psychiatric symptoms were assessed using the Colorado Symptom Index, or CSI. Quality of life was assessed using the Lehman QALY 20 instrument. Community functioning was assessed using the MCAS, which is the same instrument that I mentioned that was used to stratify people according to their need level. Community integration was assessed using something called the Community Integration Scale, or CIS. Police arrests were determined by self-report. Emergency department visits and hospitalizations were also determined by self-report. So statistical analyses were done using a number of complex statistical methods. Just briefly, percent of days stably housed over 12 months was analyzed using a linear mixed model in which the effects of treatment site and a treatment by site interaction were modeled. Repeated measures were analyzed using linear mixed models if they were continuous measures, and using generalized estimating equations if they were count measures. And the main effects were assessed using time, treatment, site, and interactions. So I should just point out here that in these analyses, it's important to realize that a time effect simply means did people in both the intervention and the control group tend to get better or worse over time. A treatment effect is whether or not the groups were different at baseline. And in a repeated measures analysis, the critical thing is whether or not there was a time by treatment interaction. In other words, was the trajectory of the two groups different depending on their treatment assignment? And finally, the number of days hospitalized was assessed using a zero-inflated negative binomial model. So because this was a interim analysis and there's another analysis of outcomes at 21 to 24 months, there was a priori decision to set the p-value for statistical significance for the final analysis at p less than 0.04. So at the midpoint analysis, which is the results I'm presenting here, we required a p less than 0.01 for significance. And that gives us an overall significance of 0.05 for the overall study. But just to point out what this means is that for this analysis, we're being held to a higher level of rigor for a higher level of significance to declare that it's a statistically significant effect of the intervention. So Eric has already described the baseline characteristics of the overall sample. I'm going to present very briefly the baseline characteristics of the moderate needs participants. So I'm presenting both the intervention and the usual care groups, but essentially you can just look at one column and you don't have to look at both because randomization worked, and on all these characteristics, the intervention and the usual care groups were similar and there were no significant differences. The average age was about, this is for the moderate needs group, average age was 42 years, about 65% male, about 79% born in Canada. In terms of ethnicity, 25% were Aboriginal, about 50% were white, and about 27 to 29% were ethno-racial, which is a term used in this study to describe non-Aboriginal people of color. In terms of baseline characteristics, again, 84% were absolutely homeless at the time of enrollment, meaning that 16% were precariously housed. The lifetime duration of homelessness in the moderate needs group was 2.5 years. About half had less than a high school education. And now just to spend a little bit of time looking at these diagnoses, these are the mini diagnoses at baseline. So these were the psychiatric and substance use diagnoses at baseline. You can see that about 59% had depressive illness, about 10% had manic episodes, about one-third had PTSD, about 12 to 15% had a mood disorder with psychotic features, 21 to 23% had psychotic disorders, and more than half had alcohol dependence or abuse, and about 60% had substance dependence or abuse. So important to realize that the relatively low proportion of people with psychotic illness in this sample reflects the fact that people who had psychotic illness or bipolar disorder were preferentially shunted into the high needs group if they met the other two criteria for being high needs. So that's why we have a group that reflects a larger group of people with depression, PTSD, and other conditions. So I guess important just to point out that this also means that it reflects perhaps a broader proportion of the homeless population that we see in the community rather than just that very small, relatively select group of people with severe psychotic disorders. So here are the results, and this is the primary outcome, percent of days stably housed over the entire one-year period. So this means, essentially, if you look at the bars show, the black bars show the overall results, and then the four gray bars to the right of the black bar show the results in each of the four cities. Excuse me. So the bottom line is that overall, in the intervention group, 69% in the intervention group, they spent 69% of their time stably housed in the first year, compared to 25.5% in the usual care group. And this is over the entire year, so 69% of the year. Just to say, in the moderate needs group, approximately 85% of the group had in the intervention group had achieved stable housing by the end of the 12 months post-randomization. And this is a highly statistically significant result. And just as you can see, there is variation, as you would expect, from city to city. So in different cities, there were different levels of success in achieving stable housing over the first year, and also reflecting the fact that usual care was different in the different cities. There are different levels of stable housing in the usual care group across sites. There was, not surprisingly, a significant treatment by site interaction, which means that the effectiveness of the intervention varied significantly among the four cities. However, it's important to realize that in all cities, there was a very statistically significant difference between the intervention group and the usual care group. So now I'm going to present the results of the secondary outcomes. In terms of community functioning, so just to orient you to all these graphs, which are all very similar, they show time 0, 6, and 12 months after randomization. The y-axis shows the outcome measure, and I will speak to a little bit about the scale here. The dotted line represents the intervention group, and the solid line represents the usual care group. So this is the MCAS score, demonstrating community functioning. What you can see is that they start out similarly and they diverge, with the intervention group achieving a statistically significant improvement in community functioning over 12 months. However, I should point out that if you look at the y-axis, the magnitude of this improvement is somewhat less than 2 points on the MCAS scale, which is a very modest absolute difference in terms of community functioning. In terms of quality of life, assessed using the Lehman Quality 20 scale, you see that, again, both groups improved over the first 12 months, with the intervention group achieving a statistically significant greater improvement in quality of life by 12 months. And again, just pointing out that this is on a scale where the mean difference, the difference is about 3 points, where the average at the end of 12 months was about 82. So again, statistically significant improvements, but not gigantic in terms of the magnitude of the difference. Here's community integration, and you can see that actually the two lines diverge and then actually converge again, so that we have statistical significance in terms of a better outcome in community integration at 6 months, but not at 12 months in the intervention group compared to usual care. Now here's emergency department visits, and you can see that the y-axis, the mean where they start is about 1.7 or 1.6. That's in the last 6 months. And what you can see is that randomization work, they're equal at randomization. There is an initial divergence, which is actually highly statistically significant with the, again, remember the solid line is the usual care group, so the usual care group has more emergency department visits than the treatment intervention group. But at 12 months, the lines converge, and the difference is significant at a p-value of 0.03. But remember, because of our a priori rules, we have to say that this is not statistically significant at 12 months. And you can see the magnitude of the difference is about 0.5 of an emergency room visit per person. And this is the results in terms of hospitalizations. In terms of the proportion admitted to hospital, it was equal in both groups over the 12 months following randomization. 23% in intervention and 20% in usual care, and this difference was not significant. We also looked to see if the number of hospital days per year among the people who were hospitalized were different. And again, there was no difference. There was an average of 33 days of spent in hospital per person hospitalized over the 1 year following randomization, and this was obviously not a significant difference. So here's a whole, I'm going to show now a number of slides where I'm not showing the p-values, because these are secondary outcomes, again, where there was no significant difference in these outcomes. So this is health status, and you can see that there's a slight trend towards improvement in both groups, but no difference between the groups. This is Colorado Symptom Index, psychiatric symptoms. Again, there's a tendency towards improvement in both groups, but no significant effect of the intervention. Substance use problems measured using the GAIN, again, a tendency towards improvement in both groups, but no difference between the intervention and usual care groups. And with police arrests, although it does look kind of like there's a difference, these were not statistically significant in terms of the intervention versus usual care groups. So in terms of our findings, Housing First plus with intensive case management is clearly effective in ending homelessness in a diverse range of urban settings for people who have moderate needs, which means a much broader spectrum of the homeless population than has previously been demonstrated, that Housing First has previously been demonstrated to be effective in. Intensive case management is much less expensive than ACT, and I won't go into this in depth because Dr. Latimer is going to talk about this, but essentially the cost of a Housing First with ICM intervention is about 30% less per year than that of ACT. However, I think counterbalancing that is the fact that at 12 months, intervention improvements in quality of life and community functioning at 12 months are modest. And the impacts in terms of decreasing healthcare utilization are again modest. So I think that there are some important factors to consider in terms of these findings. First, and this is clearly, I think, what's driving it, is that there's the issue of baseline severity. If you take people who are extremely high users and who are frequently in the hospital, frequently arrested, you have much more opportunity to greatly decrease their utilization. And if they also, so I think that the fact that we recruited in the moderate needs arm of this study, people who had less severe, less baseline severity and therefore less high utilization, we had less room, so to speak, to achieve improvements or decreases in utilization. Secondly, is the fact that, again, usual care is the control arm. And so usual care, depending on the city, does involve services which may actually improve outcomes. And lastly, as you can see with many of the graphs, there's clearly a tendency to see regression to the mean. So there's a tendency for both groups to improve, likely partly due to the fact that there people are being recruited into the study at kind of a very bottom point in their trajectories. So this study has certain limitations. It's an unblinded study, so both the participants and the researchers were aware of assignment. These are outcomes at 12 months, and there will be forthcoming results at 21 to 24 months. And for some of our outcomes, we did measure using self-report data, which obviously may have inaccuracies, and we do plan to use administrative data whenever possible to confirm our findings. So in conclusion, Housing First with intensive case management can be applied to a broad spectrum of homeless individuals who do not require assertive community treatment. And in terms of its effectiveness at 12 months, it's extremely effective in ending homelessness, and I think that's the primary message that I want to draw here. But the effectiveness in terms of ending homelessness is much greater than its effectiveness in terms of health and service use outcomes in this population. So I won't repeat the acknowledgements, which Eric has already gone through, but I do want to say that there is a very, very useful website called athome.nfb.ca, which actually is a film project that documented the lives of participants, researchers, and workers who are working with our participants. There's an incredible interactive website that allows you to play around and see the stories of all these different individuals. And so it doesn't do justice on this slide, but it's a kind of an interactive animated thing where all these little circles are moving, and if you click on one, it will expand and it will tell you the story, and the video will start of that individual. So it really gives you a flavor. This is the quantitative and somewhat dry side of the study. The qualitative aspects, which we're not going to speak to here, and the stories that are told in these videos are just incredibly powerful, and I just encourage you to check it out. So that's the end of my presentation, and I don't know if we're going to take questions at the very end, or what should I do?
It's up to you guys, of course, but I figured since it's all on the same project, we could probably go for questions at the end. Does that work?
Sure. Okay, so then I'll just plunge ahead. So, again, as mentioned, Sam Simberis was not able to speak today to the 12-month outcomes of the assertive community treatment or high needs arm of the study, so I'm going to present those as well. So, again, just going back to this diagram, we're now looking at the high needs individuals, and the support provided was assertive community treatment. And the outcome objective was obviously to determine the effects of Housing First with assertive community treatment compared to usual care for these high need, people with high needs for mental health supports. So in this study, arm of the study, there were 469 individuals randomized to the intervention and 481 randomized to usual care. I'm actually not just going to skip over this for the sake of time. If anyone has any questions about the technical details, they can ask afterwards. In terms of sample characteristics, again, this is one of these things where essentially randomization worked, but I will just kind of skip ahead here to highlight the main things in which this sample was different from the sample that I presented in the moderate needs group. So first of all, the main difference is here in terms of percent with a psychotic disorder, 52% had a psychotic disorder. 73% had substance use related problems, so that's somewhat higher. The proportion who had been homeless for 24 months was higher, 59%, and 51% had been homeless for the longest period, homeless had been more than 1 year. And you can see this is very important in terms of utilization. 53% had had two or more hospitalizations for mental illness in the past 5 years, and 33% had been arrested in the past year. Again, remember, those were actually part of the eligibility criteria for being in the high needs group. So this is the primary outcome for the high needs group. In terms of percentage of time housed, the Housing First group were housed for 69% of the first year compared to 23% in the usual care group, and this was highly statistically significant. In terms of their housing status at 12 months, the Housing First group was 73% were housed versus 31% of the usual care group. So this graph just shows the pattern, and actually these are similar patterns that are seen in the moderate needs group. You see actually a very rapid rise in the intervention group and then a plateauing, whereas in the usual care group you see a gradual rise to the level seen at 12 months. Now in terms of overall quality of life, both groups reported increases in overall quality of life over time. But the Housing First participants showed greater improvements in overall quality of life than the usual care participants, and this was statistically significant. You can see that the difference in the lines is there. Now, in terms of specific components of quality of life, I did not, in the previous presentation, break it down by components, but here in this analysis, they did compare different domains of quality of life, and although both groups showed improvements over time, the Housing First participants reported greater improvements than usual care participants in three domains, that of living quality of life relating to living situation, personal safety, and leisure activities. And you can see, so this is quality of life related to living situation. Again, the same pattern where you get the rapid rise in the intervention group with safety and with leisure. Now, in the other quality of life domains, finances, family relations, and social relations, there were significant improvements in both groups, and these were not statistically significant between the two groups. In terms of community functioning or community ability, both groups also demonstrated improvements in overall community ability, with the Housing First participants showing greater improvements than the treatment as usual participants, and that's shown here. And that's statistically significant. Now, in terms of community ability, there are subscales, and analysis of subscale findings showed significant improvements for both groups in all four subscales For two of the subscales, the Housing First participants showed significantly greater improvements. That was for behavior and social skills. You can see that here. For the other two subscales, which were health and adaptation, there were not statistically significant differences. So both groups reported improvements in the severity of psychiatric symptoms, substance use, and psychological integration. That's psychiatric symptoms, substance use, and community integration, but those were not statistically significantly different between the two groups. So to summarize the findings from the high needs group, Housing First produced superior outcomes than usual care in the areas of housing, quality of life, and community ability. Housing First can end chronic homelessness for a majority of people who are actively symptomatic and substance users. About one quarter of participants were not housed at the one-year follow-up for various reasons. Gains in quality of life by Housing First participants can be interpreted as being related to their establishment of housing stability, and stable housing also appears to contribute to greater increased gains in community ability for Housing First participants. So that's the end of the second stage of the results, and I think I'm going to turn it over to Eric now to present the economic analyses.